You hear all the bull about diet and exercise.
Carbs are evil.
Do more cardio.
Never eat bread or cookies again.
Just do a juice cleanse.
We get it. We fell for all of the BS too.
It's time to go right to the source with the truth about how to live a healthy, sustainable lifestyle. I am Liz.
And I'm Becca. We are your nutrition educators, and this is The Food Code.
Hello, happy Monday. We are in episode 4 and we are going to keep Menstrual Mondays alive because we have a lot to cover.
Yeah. It's just, there's a lot, guys. There's a lot, and it's just,
so
we need to get this all going. And this one is going to be a little bit of a, I don't know how to even describe it. It's kind of disgusting to an extent.
Mm-hmm. It's strange.
There's some strange non-contraceptive methods, non-hormonal contraceptive methods. But if you have been listening and you're like, you know, I feel like I do need to get off birth control. I feel like it's been too long. I there's other ways that I can do this. So we want to give you what those other ways are, because we're not just going to, you know, talk about the negatives of birth control and why, what it does to our bodies and all of the risks without giving you alternative options. So these are essentially termed barrier methods.
Well, and we're not even going to dive into some of the other behavioral methods. I think everybody who is sexually active, in case you guys, you know, don't know what I'm referencing, there's either like oral or non-vaginal forms of sex that you can do for pleasure. And there's also the pull-out method. So basically, this is one method where right before your partner is about to have an orgasm, they pull out and you can use the pull-out method. We're not going to dive into those in terms of depth, pros and cons
pretty
of those.
Forward.
They're pretty straightforward, nor do we need to talk about the efficacy rates, because I think it's enough said there, right? So we're going to talk about barrier methods and, give you guys some education around pros and cons of these, how effective they can be if you choose to do one of these. I actually do know individuals who have done one or two of these. And so, you know, I learned about them several years ago, but just doing the more research, it's quite interesting, some of these things that they've come up with. And so, you know, for me personally, I think if I was natural family planning, I would just go buy my app and avoid sex for those 6 days instead of doing some of these, but it's all personal preference.
Yeah. Just use a condom. Condom is a form of birth control.
Yeah.
A pretty effective one most of the time.
As long as they don't break.
As long as they don't break. Or you can combo. You can do the condom and the pull-out method, especially if you are around that period where you are ovulating. And that's what we do. You know, totally transparent. I have a basal thermometer, so I use that in the morning. I very clearly feel my ovulation. I was telling Liz this morning on the way over, I was like, ugh, I'm ovulating. I get really bad cramps around ovulation and discharge. And I get some bloating. And so like my ovulation is the time that I feel my worst. I actually feel pretty good around my period, other than, you know, an annoyance of having to wear a tampon and bleeding. But I feel the most around my ovulation period. And so I know during that time, I need to be a little bit more careful. But yeah, I don't risk it ever. And so I am not in want of getting pregnant right now. If and when we decide we want another, I'm kind of on the fence where two is enough for me. We actually had a really funny conversation with a couple. And everyone has their own opinions, but we met a couple at a wedding that's in part of Nick's family, and we know them. We didn't meet them there. We know them. And they have 3 children. I want to say they might have adopted one. But anyways, they have 3 kids, and they were like, stop at 2. You have to go from playing man-to-man to zone. It doesn't work as well. It's a lot more. Just stop at 2. I wish we would have stopped. And they like went on. It had been after a couple drinks, but they just kept going on about like, do not have another child. And I was like,
it's so funny, everybody's opinions, right? Like, I come from a huge family. Granted, none of us were in the same house at the same time because they're, you know, step and half. I, for some reason, always wanted 3. Now I'm very much in the mindset, like, I would ideally like to have 2. If it doesn't happen, that's God's plan. Okay, I'm fine. But I've told my husband already, once we have number two, healthy baby, you're getting the snip snip, because we are not going beyond two. I mean, think about this. Like, you got to get a totally different setup. You need, like, you definitely would have to get a minivan. Like, you can't do it in an SUV. I mean, unless you get like the big Escalades.
You got to get the double row in the back.
Then you have to like tag team on airplanes totally differently. You have to get tables for five, vacations for five. Like, it just seems like a lot of work, but no, I'm just kidding. We're not against it by any means.
Nick and I both came from families of three. And so he's always like, well, wouldn't you want them to have another? Like, we have a boy and a girl right now. And then like, what if they're, you know, either way, then that has enough. But I'm like, but then what about the other one? Like, and you know, it's just, so it's a challenging discussion, but anyways, I am not wanting to get pregnant right now. Coming back to the main point. So we are very careful at all times during the cycle, because you technically have a good amount of time around your ovulation. You have about 5 days that you potentially could get pregnant. I have very short cycles too. So my short, not very short, but my cycles are about 26 to 28 days. They are on the shorter side. And so I don't have a lot of time in there from after my period is done until ovulation and then before the next period comes. So we're just a little careful all around. But let's dive into these. You've probably heard of some of them. You might have not heard of others. Diaphragm is the first one. So a diaphragm is a non-hormonal saucer-shaped silicone cup that is inserted into your vajayjay. So I'm trying to decide during this podcast what to call the vagina.
I'm going to say vagina and penis because that is what they are scientifically named. And I'm sorry if it makes anyone uncomfortable, but these are the names that are in
science. I'm just trying to spice it up a little bit. This is very sciencey, guys. Okay.
So listen though. So I was actually reading this the other day in a mom's group. And so all the boy moms, you'll appreciate this, right? Oh man, this is just so funny. I'm going to try to get through it without laughing. So one of the moms posted, like, what do you deem your child's penis? Because we don't necessarily want to say penis. We feel like it's a little bit just, you know, too straightforward. And so all I'm like reading all the comments. There's some that are like hysterical, first of all. Second of all, I love one lady who just comes on and she's like, science says it's a penis. That's what we call it. I'm like, well, I mean, she's not wrong. But it's also so funny because now we're in the stage of Marcus is exploring because we're trying to potty train. And so Art's commentary, and then Marcus comes out and lets me know that he has a large pee-pee and he peed from his large pee-pee. And I'm like, I don't even know how to handle this situation. It makes me uncomfortable sometimes. But that's where I'm kind of getting this. Like, we're just going to call it the vagina. We're going to call it the penis. These are the scientific names for it. I would also love to know from other moms out there what you guys have called it. Because I call it pee-pee. Some people call it wee-wee, pecker, peter.
Nick has told Carson that he needs to name it. I'm like, yeah, he's 3.5.
Should we name him Dave?
Well, and Carson's still starting to understand, like, I told Liz, when I'm going to the bathroom, obviously, Mom's like, we never pee alone, most of us. And Carson will come in, and I'm, like, peeing, and he's like, Mom, is that coming out of your butt? And I'm like, Carson, no, it is not coming out of my butt. I am not pooping. I'm peeing. He goes, is it coming out of your penis? I'm like, Mom does not have a penis. I have a vagina. Please leave me alone.
So then, what do you tell him that you have?
I call it penis and vagina with him. There was definitely a phase where, obviously, Carson's a boy. He wakes up with a boner in the morning, sometimes. And there was a phase where that was happening a lot. And he was like, Mom, it's a big one. And I was like, I can't. This is not my realm. Nick, please get in here. This is...
But see, I'm pretty positive because our husbands are kind of the same person that Carson is saying this because Nick has initiated that. It's probably his belief in himself, which is more power to you. I mean, you know, it is a man.
I love my child. I love him so much. He's the best.
Okay, so let's get back to the
diaphragm. Okay. That is a saucer-shaped silicone cup inserted into the vagina before intercourse to block semen from entering your womb. I look at this as kind of like a condom for a female. And it must be fitted. You basically have to be fitted for your diaphragm at first by your doctor. They should be used in conjunction with a spermicide in order to prevent sperm from reaching an egg. So how effective is it? If you use the diaphragm correctly and add spermicide, you have about a 6% chance of getting pregnant after a year's use. But the odds double if you don't always use it or don't use it exactly right. So you go up to like a 12% chance of getting pregnant, 1 in 10 about, if you do not use it exactly right, which a typical person might not use this like exactly how it's supposed to be.
Well, because you have to add the spermicide yourself.
Exactly. So you have to like stop the moment that's happening, be like, I need to go put on my diaphragm, and then get back into the moment. which can be kind of challenging. So, pros and cons. You can carry your diaphragm and put it in just before you have sex. It's reusable for 12 months. I did not know that. I'm sorry. That's really gross.
Yeah, you have to clean it.
You have to clean it. Okay. Yeah, cool. If you decide you want to start a family, stop using it. It won't protect you from STDs. You have to leave it in for at least 8 hours after sex as well. You also may be more likely to get vaginal or urinary tract infection. So there's definitely pros and cons to these as well, guys. Like, we realize that. So the diaphragm is the first one we're going to
cover. Yes. The second one is called a cervical cap. So it looks just like its name, a little hat-shaped piece of silicone that you put over your cervix to keep out sperm. Very similar to the diaphragm. Okay, you have to be fitted again by your doctor, and it should be used with spermicide. How well does it work? Well, it can fail about 20% of the time, meaning 20 out of 100 women who use it will get pregnant in a year. That's too high of a risk for me if I was trying to prevent pregnancy, so I probably wouldn't go this route. But again, similar to the diaphragm, you have to coat the inside of the cap with spermicide and insert it into the vagina up to the cervix before sex. The cap blocks the cervix, and then the spermicide kills the sperm. So for this one, you must keep it in place for 6 hours after sex. During that time, you can choose to have sex again, and you do not need to reapply the spermicide, but you should still check that the cap is in place. Here's my problem with things like this. I would just be really nervous that it would like get lost up in there and you wouldn't be able to get it out. Like, have you seen or heard those horrible stories of people like forgetting they had a tampon in? How you do that, I don't know. Mm-hmm. Or like, I guess maybe they had a drunk night and just forgot and put another one in, and then like all of a sudden they have one that's like way up in there and they have to get it surgically removed. This is what scares me from this. But anyways, so to remove it, you have to pull it out with your fingers, and it is very important. This is like all over every thing that I read regarding the cervical cap, that you have to pull it out within 48 hours after having sex. If you leave it in, there's a chance that you'll get a staph infection, and if that gets out of control, you can go into toxic shock syndrome, which would need immediate medical care, obviously. But this one, again, is reusable. Once the cap is out, you're going to rinse it with soap and water, let it air dry, keep it in a case. And then they also say not to use any creams or lubricants for women as you age, depending upon, you know, kind of what you're dealing with. Some people with PCOS or endometriosis, things like that. This may not be the best route to go, because I do know a lot of women who should be using lubricants. We have actually talked with a couple of ladies who talk about the pH balance in the vagina and how important lubricants are, because you can end up with yeast infections or a lot of irritation in the vagina if you're not using lubricants. But anyways, pros and cons here. So again, you can leave it in for up to 48 hours after sex, but not longer. You can stop use at any time and try to get pregnant. The cervical cap is not widely prescribed, so it definitely is going to take some education, conversations with your doctor, and then practice to using it right. It will not prevent against STDs, and it can also raise your chances of bladder infections. And then they do say that it is not recommended if you have sex at least 3 times a week or if you have a history of pelvic diseases. So this would be something, you know, if you are very sexually active, maybe you want to choose a different alternative.
Yeah. So we've also talked about spermicide a few times. So what is that? Basically, you put this chemical into your vagina to kill or paralyze sperm. You can buy spermicide over the counter in several forms: gels, foam, suppositories. And this is the same spermicide that you would add to the diaphragm or cervical cap. So how well does it work? Spermicide alone can fail about 28% of the time. You can use it with condoms, diaphragms, other contraceptives to boost their effectiveness. Some people are allergic or sensitive to the main chemical used in spermicide, though. So it's non-oxynol-9 is the name of the chemical. You shouldn't rinse out your vagina for at least 8 hours after using a spermicide, and some may leak out. Doesn't protect against STDs. And in fact, infections might be more likely if the spermicide irritates your vagina. So just what is a spermicide? That is what it is. So the next one is a sponge. Okay, so the birth control sponge is a piece of plastic foam that you must be inserted into the vagina prior to intercourse. The sponge is similar to the diaphragm in that it prevents sperm from entering the uterus. Two big differences are that the sponge already contains spermicide, so you don't have to manually apply it, and you can buy it without a prescription, unlike the diaphragm and the totally blanking on the name of what the other
cervical
cervical cap. Wow. So anyways, how well does the sponge work? The sponge can be among the least reliable birth control for some people. It prevents pregnancy about 91% of the time for women who've never given birth and who use it correctly and consistently every time. But that drops to just 76% of women who have had children and who use it the way most people do. I'm assuming likely because there is some form of like stretching that happens mm-hmm. when you obviously give birth. Even if you've had a C-section. And so I'm assuming that is why. Pros and cons. The foam feels like your vaginal tissue. So you can have sex multiple times in a 24-hour period. Once one is inserted, you can stop using it and try to start a family right away. So it's nice that it doesn't have like after effects. With typical use, it's about 76% effective at preventing pregnancy, which is obviously not a high percentage. So here's the thing. These are not as effective as birth control for the majority of them. But we got to keep looking at pros and cons. That's all I say.
Yep. And if you missed the last episode talking about, you know, the oral contraceptives, you can go back and listen to that. We talked about the side effects being on birth control. All of those things are in previous episodes. So let's move on to vaginal gel. So this is known as Phexxi. It is a prescription gel that is placed into the vagina before sex. It is pre-filled into an applicator that you would insert just like a tampon. I'm just going to say personally, I'd be more apt to do this than mm-hmm. the other weird cup things. And again, this is not to say the other things are bad or you're gross if you do those things. I just have a fear of things getting lost. Okay. So the gel contains a mixture of lactic acid, citric acid, and potassium butyrate, which alters your vagina's pH balance. So the vagina is normally on the acidic side, but semen makes it more alkaline, which favors the survival of sperm. So Phexxi's low pH acidifies the vagina, making it a hostile environment to the sperm. Okay, so the result here is that the sperm will not survive the journey through the cervix up into the fallopian tubes to meet the egg. In simple terms, it just kills the sperm. So no sperm or dead sperm means no babies. How well does this work? It is considered 86% effective. You can also pair this with things like diaphragms, condoms, cervical caps, or other contraceptives to boost effectiveness. If you are perfect with this, it can be up to 93% effective on the high end. So this means that you would place it in prior to sex and understand, though, that it only lasts 1 hour. So if you're getting it on for longer than an hour, this isn't going to be the way to go. Some people do.
I know. Who has time? I don't know. Who has fucking time? Who has time for an hour of sex when you have children and they are around? I'm sorry.
Oh, well, yeah, when you have children and they're around, for sure. But anyways, so pros and cons here. So it obviously, a con, it only lasts for 1 hour. So you would need to put it in before having sex and then reapply it if you don't have sex within that hour. Don't take your chances here. And then it also needs to, again, be reapplied every sexual encounter. People can also be sensitive or allergic to this as well. So that can result in infections or irritations. And then it does not protect against STDs like HIV. So amongst some of these other like side effects in terms of like the vaginal tract, it can lead to yeast infections, bacterial vaginosis, urinary tract infections, UTIs, and then just general vaginal discomfort. So think here like burning, itching, just like not pleasurable. So it is noted that if you are somebody that has, you know, a history of reoccurring UTIs or vaginal infections, you should speak with your doctor about this before trying the vaginal gel. I'm just all about saying vagina and vaginal today.
Well, I'm actually reading. So Liz and I have notes on this, and I'm actually reading the next one. I don't even know if I want to cover it.
Covered this, the pull-out method.
No, this is outer course. Outer course is apparently different than the pull-out method, to where the penis doesn't even go in the vagina. So, you know,
it's known as oral sex, but we'll just leave it there.
No. Okay.
Yeah, that's what the reference is, oral sex.
I was visioning something so totally different, so I'm just going to keep that to myself.
We'll just cut that part out. We keep going.
Okay. Next up is the female condom. So a female condom is similar to a male condom, except it is inserted into the vagina before sex. It is easier to obtain than other methods of birth control because it is available at pharmacies. With typical use, like, you know, not perfect use, but with typical use, it's about 79% effective at preventing pregnancy. What is it? It's a lubricated latex tube that you put inside the vagina. It has flexible rings on both ends. One end is closed to keep out the sperm. So in a given year, about 1 in 5 women who use female condoms get pregnant. That is not adequate for me. Pros and cons. Female condoms also protect against STDs. You can buy them in drugstores or online. Allergies and side effects are rare. So it might be a good choice if you're young, have a lot of sex, have a higher chance of getting pregnant. You have to use it every time and the right way for it to work well. So just something to consider. And then obviously male condoms, a thin barrier of latex, lambskin, synthetic fibers placed over the penis with correct use. Condoms are 98% effective. Typical use, 85%. But if they are on and they do not break, they are about 98% effective. So my recommendation, condoms, track your cycle. You are much less likely to get pregnant.
Yes. Yeah, because there's a lot of effort, I think, in some of these. And then, like you said, you're kind of taking away, like, in the moment, you know, the pleasure or the love that would be happening to be like, oh, hold on a second. Let me go insert this cup and put some...
I just have this opinion of like, I'm sorry, if this doesn't go well, I'm the one carrying a child for 9 months. So why don't you put the effort in, put the condom on, and we'll move on.
Yeah.
That is my opinion.
Yes. I don't disagree. I'm very excited to learn more about the, you know, the male birth control that's coming out and the research around that. But anyways, moving on, we got a couple more here. So sterilization, which is tubal ligation. So a tubal ligation blocks off your fallopian tubes, therefore preventing sperm from reaching any of your eggs. A ligation is typically performed on women who have already given birth and are sure they do not want to have more children. This is also just called tying your tubes, getting your tubes tied, right?
Yep.
But unfortunately for women of childbearing age who have not had any children, a tubal ligation can be very difficult to come by, even if you are 100% certain that children are not something that you want, you know, in your life. They're not in the cards for you. You've chosen not to have children, which I do not blame anyone for choosing not to have children. But oftentimes doctors will not do this. You would have to visit, you know, multiple doctors and find a doctor that would actually perform this procedure for you. Even though it's your body, your choice, and you should be able to make that choice. It's just not the case in terms of getting your tubes tied if you just want it for birth control methods. Long-term side effects of tubal ligation or post-tubal ligation syndrome symptoms can include irregular or heavy periods, hot flashes, night sweats, chronic fatigue, joint pain, sore muscles, weight gain, loss of sex drive, headaches, pelvic pain, memory loss, anxiety, mood swings, difficult sleeping, vaginal dryness, increase in just your PMS symptoms in general, and then also early menopause. So this is something that I would personally kind of keep as like a last resort. I mean, if you're with somebody and you know that you do not want to have children, they can get the SNP-SIP very easily. Or I would maybe consider, you know, one of the non-hormonal contraceptives over this, just because there are so many different side effects.
Yeah. So we've talked about the fertility awareness method. And I think, to be totally honest, yes, it's a little bit of work, but when it comes down to the alternative of getting pregnant when you are not ready to be pregnant or don't want to be pregnant, it's completely natural, hormone-free alternative to conventional birth control. It involves tracking your menstrual cycle daily, and by doing this, you can figure out at which point of the month you are fertile and avoid sex on those days. With perfect use, fertility awareness is about 95 to 99% effective. When used like the average person, percentage can drop to 76 to 88%. The method does not prevent, obviously, STDs or anything like that, but these are using basal thermometers and apps. So digital devices that leverage mathematics for predicting fertility to help women avoid or plan for pregnancy. So it is effective. The FDA has approved natural cycles as a contraceptive device. So this is similar to something called Daisy. Daisy's a little expensive. I got to find the name of the one that I have because it's similar to a Daisy. It's just not as expensive as the Daisy. That's a basal thermometer that I keep next to my bed. So you basically track your temperature every morning. The app will show you if you're fertile or not. So, you know, you essentially use that with vaginal discharge, body temperature, all of the different symptoms that you can have, and you can then skip or use condoms those days. And, you know, it's up to you to make it as effective as possible. Yeah. There are no side effects. There's no symptom, you know, nasty negative things that can happen. If you have a regular cycle, you should be able to pretty much know exactly when you're ovulating.
Yep. I believe the one that I had was natural cycles. I'd have to look. My basal thermometer, as I mentioned in the last episode, is like floating around the house because they apparently think that it's for Marcus. But I actually, so with my Oura ring, I've been tracking my ovulation because of the temperature on here. And it asks me now with the period predictor, you know, if I've started my period, and then it kind of projects ovulation and stuff. But I also use a free app called Life. That is a very easy, user-friendly app that you can look at. It will show you green days leading into ovulation. So sperm can live inside of your body for up to 3 days. And so it'll show you 3 days out, the day of ovulation and the day after, because those are typically the five most fertile days. So that's really simple and easy. It's also free. I just always forgot to take my temperature before I actually got up out of bed. And so the basal thermometer wasn't like working for me just personally. So you guys, you have to just decide like what contraceptive, you know, is right for you. We totally understand this can be overwhelming. There's a lot of information to take in. There's a lot of options out there on the market, which we, I think, need to be very thankful for, because years and years ago, people did not have, you know, this available to us in forms of hormonal, non-hormonal, or just not even, you know, any form of birth control, other things that we can do that are not related to like taking a pill or inserting, you know, something into your body. And so it's just about educating you, have a discussion too with your doctor, and figure out which method is best for you. And I'm just going to say, if you are sexually active, I think it's important that your partner also understands and that you have a conversation with them. Obviously, Becca and I are both married. We have spoken with our husbands about, you know, this, because I mean, Art and I are family planning right now. And so, you know, he knows what are my fertile days. And, you know, then we're looking at, you know, other things as well. And I know Becca and Nick have done that in the past. So if you're trying to get pregnant, then you can utilize some of these things like in your favor. If you're trying to avoid pregnancy, then you can utilize any of these things, you know, to help prevent that. But I think it's also important to have a conversation with your partner. And then the only other thing that we haven't discussed, and I'm just going to leave this out here, some people have very differing views on this, but you also have backup here to all of this, and that is the plan B. So if you have, you know, had intercourse, you're not really sure, maybe the condom broke, maybe the pull-out method didn't go as planned or whatever, you also have the backup of the plan B, which I believe you have to
72
take.
72 hours, I think.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So that is that. You know, and I think take into you know, consideration everything that we've talked about. Write a list of pros and cons for yourself. Think about your lifestyle too. Like, do you have a crazy busy schedule? I talked about when I studied abroad, that was nice because I wasn't, you know, I could skip my, you know, period and just keep taking my pills so that I didn't have a bleed while I was there. Some people are also very busy in busy seasons of life. I kept forgetting to take my pill. And so I was like, the IUD is going to be the option for me because this is just not working. So just try to figure out what's best for you and, you know, what you feel most comfortable with. And it's all also personal preference. So we hope that this was informative and, you know, educational for you. We will in the upcoming episodes be talking about hormonal acne, PMS symptoms such as migraines, heavy periods, and other negative hormone related symptoms, and how we can naturally support our bodies to improve those. So stay tuned with us. We've got several more episodes. I think we've got three or four more lined up after this one, and we'll be back with another interview on Wednesday.
Thank you for listening to The Food Code. If this episode resonated with you, please share, rate, and review, as this helps us reach others around the world. With that, thank you for listening. We'll be back soon. Love you guys.